Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
We begin with some terrifying geography of the 21st century. The arbitrary map of the world drawn by colonial masters at the end of World War I a century ago seems to be slowly coming apart. It's not reverting to some post-colonial pastoral equilibrium in Africa and the Middle East and Asia. There are simply large areas of lawless, ungovernable chaos. Think of Ukraine. Think of Syria. In some areas, people have grown up and died without ever having a government around them, such as the case for Congo, the Democratic Republic of Congo, where there is neither a democratic republic or any kind of government. Areas of Chechnya, parts of Pakistan, out of reach of the government in Islamabad, while the northeast of Nigeria is a place of radicalization, the home of the Boko Haram terrorists. Here to help us think about the millions of people, and the number is growing, the millions of people growing up without laws or a government, are Manji Cheto, risk analyst on the political economy of sub-Saharan Africa at Teneo, a global advisory firm, and also Ambassador Nicholas Burns, former Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs under President George W. Bush. He's now professor of the practice of diplomacy and international politics at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Ambassador Burns, welcome.
Thank you very much.
And Manji Cheto, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you.
How much would you say the statelessness of millions of people around the world is an international security concern, Ambassador Burns?
Oh, I think it's looming to be one of the major concerns of the 21st century. If you think of the last century, the 20th century, it was really interstate conflict between states, World War I and II, that dominated. Right now, we're looking at massive displacement of people inside states because of conflicts within states. Think of Darfur, Congo, and now think of Syria, where half the population is homeless, 11 million out of 22 million. So how does one respond to this? How do we hold governments to account when, in fact, in Syria, it's the Syrian government that is brutalizing its own people? And in Nigeria, it's a hapless and ineffectual government that can't counter Boko Haram. I think it's a major challenge.
Manji Cheto, looking at Nigeria, how close is the north of Nigeria to being a distinct, lawless, ungovernable state on its own?
Well, I think, you know, you need to, there certainly is a disconnect between kind of what happens in northeast Nigeria to what happens in the rest of the country. And you know, just for perspective, Nigeria is an incredibly large country. And you would be forgiven if you were kind of sitting even somewhere up north, like Kano, thinking that actually nothing is happening. And you can give you a false sense of peace. Now, the picture is certainly very different if you go to the northeastern states in the extreme northeast corner of Nigeria, where virtually the state feels completely absent, and it actually feels like a militarized zone. But I think in the context where nation states and territories have been drawn across, I mean, if one part of a state is falling apart, then it does give the impression actually that effectively the state is a failed state. But I think I'm not quite sure that I would make the argument that Nigeria is at that stage yet, but it's certainly the risk continues to grow on a daily basis.
You know, it's almost the case, Ambassador Burns, that a failed state is one condition, but an even more destabilizing condition could be an institutionalized chaos like you have, for instance, in Pakistan. Northwest Frontier Province has been a kind of stateless, ungoverned territory that is sort of accepted within the Pakistan government, even though no one would say Pakistan is a failed state. Northwest Frontier Province is a place well known for radicalization.
Well, that's right. And even in the British Empire, the Northwest Frontier Province was both ungoverned and some would say ungovernable. The same is true, has been true with Pakistani rule. And we've seen what's happened. We've seen that it's that part of the world that has become really ground zero for many of the terrorist groups that have been striking at the Afghan people and at the United States and at India, for that matter. So I think a major preoccupation of global leaders today is when do we intervene in someone else's internal affairs and when do we not? We saw that President Clinton intervened successfully in Bosnia and Kosovo to stop two wars, but then we had a major problem in the intervention of Iraq in 2003. We face that question today in a way. Just been a ceasefire agreement in Ukraine. How much should we be intervening in the affairs of Ukraine to help the Ukrainian government against Russian rebels? And I'll come back to Syria, John, because I think it's the greatest humanitarian crisis in the world today. There's not another major state where half of its population has lost their homes, lost their jobs, living in makeshift camps because of the brutalization of its own government, but also terrorist groups like ISIS and Jabhat al-Nusra. And it puts a major responsibility on the powerful states like the United States to make these big decisions. When do we intervene in a war? When do we stand back?
And Ambassador Burns, if we use Iraq as an example, the transition from Saddam Hussein to some sort of democratic civic order, it passes through this territory of statelessness. And even if Bashar al-Assad were to fall tomorrow, Syria's trajectory into something more stable is completely unknown at this point, based on the precedents.
Well, that's really the tragedy. Even if, as you say, even if Assad were to leave, there's no reason to believe that the situation would be better. As Lakhdar Brahimi, the UN negotiator, said quite famously, Syria is melting away. It's really ceased to exist as a nation state. It's riven by this conflict between Shia and Sunni Islam, the Christian and Kurdish populations just trying to survive. And I think we'll see a struggle for power in Syria, no matter who's in charge in Damascus for some time to come.
Manji Cheto, in Nigeria, would Boko Haram be able to take that territory and wall it off from the rest of Nigeria? Or could Nigeria and the Nigerian government simply just jettison the northeast province without any sort of consequence to Nigeria as a whole?
Let me pick up on the last point. There's always going to be consequences, irrespective of whether or not Boko Haram can actually take over the state, because already, you know, we're already seeing cases of internally displaced people. That's having a knock-on effect in community relations across the north. With that said, I mean, there's currently no evidence to suggest that while Boko Haram actually has moved and actually destroyed some of the state institutions in the northeast, they actually have not replaced it with any sort of form of governance. So I think that in itself points to the fact that they probably will be unable to actually completely displace a government and actually install something that kind of looks like a quasi-government, so to speak. With that said, if any state institutions are actually eroded, it certainly does create anarchy, in which case this instability then remains in a constant state of flux, which for neighbouring countries, I mean, if you think about, if you kind of look at the map of Nigeria and the northeast corner of Nigeria, it is bordering Cameroon, it's bordering Chad. It's also a key route in the Trans-Sahelian trade route. So actually, you know, if that happens, while the impact might be quite limited in Nigeria, it's actually quite significant from a regional security point of view. One thing that is quite clear is that Boko Haram and the instability that it is creating is certainly opening up more room for other terrorist groups operating in the Sahel to find a safe haven. And I think that's really where the main argument is here. So while, you know, domestically, I think there's a level of kind of skepticism about having, foreign intervention, I think the Nigerian government has tried to make the argument that really the international community has to see this as an international stake and actually support the Nigerian government.
Ambassador Burns, I want to end on something really in more human terms here. Choose whatever stateless, ungovernable zone you care to. What message would you send, or what perspective would you expect from a 10 or 11-year-old boy or girl growing up in northeast Nigeria or Chechnya or Georgia or Syria? What's their future in this century?
Well, I can't imagine what it would be like to be a young Syrian kid these days, because you see your parents have lost their jobs. You've lost your family home. You've been living out in the open, even in the winter, just trying to flee your own government, which is firing barrel bombs into your city, or these vile terrorist groups that are doing the same. And these poor innocent civilians are caught between terrorist groups and a depraved government. And really no hope, because the international community is not coming in a big way. No one's sending in a peacekeeping force to separate those parties or conduct a ceasefire. And, you know, these kids, many of them are now in refugee camps in Lebanon, in Iraq, in Syria, but and Jordan. But the majority of them are inside their own country, but with no hope to return to normal life. And I think it's the saddest situation we see in the world today.
Manji, what's it like to live in the northeast of Nigeria? If you're a young teenage boy or girl, what's your future? What do you think?
Well, you know, I think what the Boko Haram insurgency has done, it's effectively robbed a whole generation of Nigerians in the northeast of their innocence, of their youth. And you're constantly living under a fear of attack. I should state here that, you know, the attack is not just so much a fear of attack from a terrorist group, but it's also a fear of attack on whether or not, you know, security forces will perceive you to be a threat. I think this is one of the issues certainly Western partners have raised in Nigeria. To what extent can the military actually guarantee that it is protecting human rights? So really, I mean, that the situation is quite dire. We do have a humanitarian crisis on our hand in northeast Nigeria. It is the issue that is less discussed, but it is significant. And also in the internally displaced camps, there are very worrying reports of child rape and child abuse. And this issue needs to be looked at quite closely and actually taken up by the international community.
She's a risk analyst on the political economy of sub-Saharan Africa at Teneo, a global advisory firm. Manji Cheto joined us from Abuja. Manji, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And thoughts on the tragedy of statelessness from Ambassador Nicholas Burns, former Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs under President George W. Bush. He's now professor of the practice of diplomacy and international politics at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Ambassador, thanks so much.
Thanks so much, John.